Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Matty B. Got a big time show this week, and I actually do it backwards because with the basketball tournament going on, I had a complete shocking development with NC State making the Sweet 16. And with that, there's some relevance here because the media, I've noticed, have started to really make their push to keep the ACC alive. And I'm not talking about CBS or whomever's doing the tournament broadcast, because I have, there's some bone to pick with them too, with their broadcast times and stuff. It's been a weird year, but before we get there, NC State basically stole Pitt's bid for the tournament, right? I don't know if we talked about it last week. NC State wins the ACC tournament. They get the automatic bid. Committee basically said, yeah, that's why we left Pitt out. Pitt gets their NIT invite. They decline it, which, of course, I'm all for, right? I don't think the CBI should exist. I don't think the NIT should exist anymore. Why? Why are the players playing? Now with NIL, I get it. Maybe they're getting money. But before, it's like, what's the point of that tournament? Oh, well, we're giving athletes a chance to like really showcase themselves. To who? Who's watching that? No one. What are you talking about? It's like, I don't even think half the games are on TV. So like, what is the point of that tournament other than advertising? And like, what they do, they hang the print signs like a Little League baseball field. Like local businesses are just in the gym. So I don't get that. That same with like the bowl games. People are like, oh, I hope when the playoff expands, the bowl games stick around. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't want that. You want a gambling thing, which is going to be a key theme in this show today, because I'm fired up about Major League Baseball's gambling investigations, which we'll get to. But in terms of the tournament, I keep hearing about how, oh, the football playoff is going to stink. College football playoff, man. You're only going to have a couple of top teams, and they're going to be the only ones with a chance to actually win. Lo and behold, every year I bring it up for the NCAA tournament, most of the top seeds advance. I think NC State's the only double-digit seed that made the Sweet 16, and guess what? They're the ACC tournament champs. It's not like they're scum you, right? Where it's like, hey, they're just some small-time like garbage program. Like, they have a history of basketball. That's supposed to be NC State's best sport, and it hasn't been good. In fact, the last time I think they even made it this far was in Pittsburgh when they upset Villanova. I think they were, and Villanova was the one seed that year, and they knocked him out that opening weekend. But now I keep seeing the same thing. It's like the same schools can compete, and that's why I really don't want to see the lower conferences get left behind, because we see with Gonzaga, and we saw it a decade or so ago with Boise State, and then later TCU before, and even Utah before they got promoted. Smaller teams can build their brand, and I'm telling you, they can have playoff success. They might never win the national championship. Gonzaga hasn't been able to break through and do that. Butler came close. Florida Atlantic last year. San Diego State, I think, was also close last year, and they're still alive this year. So those teams can have success once they get going. And it seems like a program that's able to put together, as long as they can keep their coach, that's a key detail here. But you can't tell me that in football, one smaller school from a smaller conference, they're going to be able to go through and break through and possibly make like a TCU run a couple years ago where they get the national championship game. Maybe they get blown out there, but they got the playoff wins. And that's all that matters, like in terms of the smaller conference type stuff. So the basketball tournament only reinforced what I thought all along. And the craziness is NC State was ready to move on from Kevin Keats, basically, is what everyone was saying. They're like, yeah, they were like almost in the top three of the conference early in January. And they lost like 9 games in a row or something. And they're like, yeah, he lost it. And he wins the tournament, saves his job, and then makes a Sweet 16, which they haven't done in forever. And if they continue to win, it would be insane. But Any thoughts you have on the tournament? Did you watch any of it?
I watched a decent amount of the games over the weekend. I feel like you're starting to see some sense of balance coming into the tournament now, because with the NILs and with some of the bigger schools being able to bring in higher rated prospects, I feel like you're not seeing quite as many upsets as you have in years past. I mean, a lot of those higher ranked teams are still in the hunt. I mean, with the exception of Kentucky's big meltdown.
The Kentucky one made me laugh. Because they should fire their coach, right? I don't know how you can keep doing less with more. I thought for sure they'd fire him right away. Right?
I mean, I don't know.
If you're having number one classes, look at Bama with Saban. They were number one class every year in football. And what if he didn't win? He only won one national championship and that was it in like 15 years. They'd have been trying to run him out of town for the insanity of that. Look at Jimbo Fisher, right? I mean, I guess he didn't win the championship at Texas A&M. But getting the number one class, especially in basketball, because that's like the entire thing, is, hey, we're going to give you the best recruits. You're the coach. Put it together. What are you doing? It's not like he's getting five guys drafted every year either. So some guys are sticking around or transferring, and he's just not winning. It's embarrassing. And to your point about the NIL stuff, I keep seeing this misconception where people think that guy from Oakland or whatever, he was like 24, which I think is what Blake Corum is, right? And people keep saying, oh, these are COVID guys. These super seniors, they're not going to exist anymore, like, going forward. And I'm telling you, they're wrong. I don't know what the ages are going to be. Because if you come in, if you graduate like high school, or whatever, you could be 19. So you could have your 5 years, you could be 24. The reason guys like Blake Corum come back now with the NIL is because of NIL. The NFL is telling them, hey, we might not draft you till the seventh round. But if the school's like, hey, we're going to give you a couple $1 million if you come back for your fifth year, that player is going to come back, and that even more so at a school like Oakland, where that kid's not going to the NBA. Like, let's be real here. I forget his name. The guy, he wasn't even the starting guy. He was a sixth man. He's come in and shoot threes, and he's 24, and everyone's making a big deal about how old he was. That guy's going to continue to exist because when he's like a graduate transfer, after redshirting that first year, he's not even the starter. If he's getting any NIL money, he's not going to want to leave college and go work a regular job. Right? Oh, you can get paid to stay in college, hang out with all your bros, or you can, like, you know, go out in the real world and be like a car salesman or something. Like, 100% he's going to play that extra year. And especially with some of these NILs at smaller schools, like, I'm telling you, smaller private schools, they might be able to throw together some money. They might not be giving them a couple million. But heck, if you're making six figures playing basketball one more year, you're going to do it. And I think that's where you're going to see some balance compared to where my football comparison is, like some of these smaller schools. I think you're only going to be able to zero in on a couple that are able to make a run. Others from the small other conferences, that's why I want every conference to have an auto bid, because you don't know which conference is going to be. Every year it might be different, but if a school is enough to build their brand and they have enough intangibles, maybe it's like taking transfers or academics, giving people a chance. Like West Virginia for a while, they were able to give athletes a chance that weren't able to cut it at other schools, like academically or whatever. And they were kind of like their savior school, and it really worked out for them. And then other schools kind of caught on and they're like, yeah, we'll do the same thing, you know? And it kind of flatlined for them. Plus they had to move conferences or whatever. So that might have had something to do with it. But I'm telling you, those basketball ones, all it takes is a couple of guys where you're at a small school and you get local investors or like some alum that's a millionaire. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to throw these guys a couple six figures here. They're going to do advertising for my local business. No one else in the country has ever even heard of that school, basically. They didn't know it was in Michigan. And then they come back and they win. And they might not make the Final Four or win the national championship. But for Oakland, that was more advertising than what they would have got anywhere else for the same cost. Because, like, let's say even a Super Bowl ad's like millions and millions of dollars. That's not a guarantee for people to actually watch it, right? If you can pay a million, like even less, it might even be a couple hundred thousand for some of those guys. They might only be taking like, what, 10,000 or whatever. You don't know what those guys are getting. They might not be getting much. And then they're able to take that money and use it as advertising for the school because they made it to what, the second round of the NCAA tournament, or I guess they call it the third round. It's kind of stupid, but that's my take on it. Small schools are going to use that as an advertising marketing write-off, writing some of these NILs together. Write that down. I'm telling you, what else? Oh, the shift is on though too. Cause I talked about the ACC, the media down here has really been pushing NC State so much that I've never seen NC State pushed this much locally. And a lot of it, they bring up the ACC and how the ACC has always had a team in the Sweet 16. They're like a basketball conference historically, and how it wouldn't be the same without UNC. And the language they're using makes me think they're kind of pushing UNC, because UNC is like a number one seed. They should have been getting most of the coverage. They haven't really been getting any in the local media. And I'm almost wondering if it's kind of a response to Clemson's lawsuit, where if they tell UNC, like, go ahead and leave the ACC, but you're going to make a lot of people down here angry. And there's going to be some retaliation against you. Like, if you leave Duke behind and NC State and this great basketball conference, we're not going to really be talking about you in basketball season. And personally, I don't think it's going to matter at all. Like, if I was UNC, I wouldn't care one bit. You take the money and you try to get to the next level, because we're already starting to see it. Out of left field, Michigan was able to hire May from Florida Atlantic. I didn't even know he was on the board, Matt. Juwan Howard, I felt bad kind of that he was fired. It needed to happen. Took Michigan to a Sweet 16 and an Elite 8. Things kind of fell off. He had some health issues. There were like talks about NIL not being there. I wonder how much was on like him not really pushing it, or how much the school, like, boosters weren't behind him or whatever. All in the past. No hard feelings. Still a big fan of him. I hope he lands in the NBA somewhere and he has a great coaching career. But as I was looking through coaches, I'm like, I hope Michigan has a guy that, like, you know, has a winning record. And it seemed like May was going to go to Louisville, right? So I didn't even think he was on the board. It almost seemed like it was a done deal, according to everyone down here in the ACC country. Kept saying Louisville is one of the top basketball jobs. They're going to get May. He's kind of like a Midwest guy from Indiana. And next thing you know, I'm watching the tournament, and it's like halftime of one of the games, and they announced that he's coming to Michigan. And I couldn't believe it. I almost fell to my chair. Because everyone was telling me about how the ACC's been great, how Louisville's a great basketball program, how their revenue or whatever, they're like number two behind Kentucky, how they invest in basketball, they're a basketball school. And then it came, after the news broke, the narrative shifted down here. It's like, oh, Michigan must have just outbid them, you know? And then it turned out Michigan paid less, Matt, than what Louisville offered. Like, I think Michigan paid like three-something million. Louisville's offer was supposedly, if I'm trusting the media down here, over $4 million. So I'm really shocked and intrigued by this. So I listened to the interview, and he flat out says that He talked about the Louisville rumors and said, like, they weren't true. He said he had a lot of schools contacted him, and a lot of them were saying, like, should we wait to make a hire? Like, are you really interested? And he was like, well, don't wait for me, whatever. I don't know if I'm going to leave, blah, blah, blah. Kids are graduating. This is the year I'm probably going to leave if I'm going to. And so, like, Louisville's like, all right, we'll take it. And he basically called him out and was like, look, they weren't able to put together the total package. And he was hinting that the Big Ten and the Michigan's NIL and stuff was going to be the future. And the way he talked in the interview, it was almost like nothing Louisville could have promised him would have mattered, because he talked about the strength of the Big Ten as like the national conference. And it's the first time I've actually heard a coach say, hey, I took a job because, you know, the conference, the Big Ten basketball conference is better than the ACC. And I think it really shocked a lot of people down here, because I have heard so many people talk about that Michigan hire that it is unbelievable to me. I mean, we talked about it. Basketball is number two at Michigan at most, right? Football is clearly number one. So then the media shifted to, oh, he couldn't take the pressure. The ACC is like a pressure cooker. He never would have been able to handle it here. It wasn't just the money at Michigan. It's because it's an easier job. He can win easier there. Like the narrative shifting was so crazy to me that I had to talk about it on the show. I wasn't planning on talking basketball on the show, but I think it plays into what we've been talking about with the ACC falling apart. At some point, it's not just going to be coaches, Matt, that realize, hey, I have better opportunities if I just go to the Big Ten or the SEC, right? And so these basketball programs that you see, like UNC, because I try to show the UNC side first, like in the ACC, ACC's still pumping the media about how great their conference is and all this stuff with basketball. But in the grand scheme of things, it's going to take a couple years to kind of shift. And I made this prediction in football too. I told you, and a lot of people laughed at me when I said NIL is going to be big for Michigan football, because they're just going to be able to pay people to kind of hang around. And that's exactly what happened. And they won the national championship. And I still have people that would call me an idiot and a loser. Those guys are all silent now, Matt. My phone has been getting way less texts from Big Ten buddies, because they're just going to shut up once Michigan wins the national championship. No more cheating scandal, nothing. Because there's no defense. I mean, Ryan Day brought up the sign stealing thing again in his interview. Did you see that?
I don't know.
He just brought it up. And then Harbaugh fired back and said that none of the coaches he hired for his Chargers gig were born on third base. As a clear response, because like that's what he calls Ryan Day out for. Clear response. And then Ohio State's, their message boards are just blowing up right now with anti-Harbaugh hate. By one sentence, he can get into all of their heads in the NFL. So you can't tell me that he's not plugged in to still what the other coaches are saying about him in college. Because I remember months ago when they were saying that if Harbaugh went to the NFL, the NCAA was still going to try to get him suspended in the NFL. And that kind of disappeared, right? Because I know they look like idiots. They fired the sign-stealing guy, didn't let them have any sign-stealing guys at any of the games after that, and they still won the national championship. And I think that's where the Big Ten with basketball, if you're able to steal a basketball coach from Louisville, that's 100% a basketball school, 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, that never would have happened. Michigan never would have made that hire. And you saw it happen with Juwan. I know it was later in the cycle, but Michigan had to go with a safe alum hire. And it was baffling to Big Ten guys too, because like Ohio State hired from within. They thought they had no chance. And then after he made the Big Ten comments, I saw a lot of Ohio State guys that were kind of mad that they didn't make a run at him, which would have been weird if Michigan and Ohio State were bidding for May's basketball job. But he was the clear number one. The Big Ten is only going to have three active coaches that have been to a Final Four. That's Tom Izzo, unless he retires, which there's some rumors there that he might. And then the guy at UCLA, which he's rumored he might leave, and now May at Michigan. He took FAU there last year. So it's going to be it's going to be eye-opening where if the Big Ten starts to steal basketball coaches from basketball powers in the ACC, I wonder what that shift will be, because the Big Ten isn't even good in basketball right now. I'm surprised Purdue made it. That was part of my beef with the TV, because I watched a lot of the games too, because of like sicknesses going around. And I'll tell you, most of the games were blowouts, and the exciting games they put on at night at the same exact time. Like, people down here were complaining because on both weekend games, they had UNC and NC State on their games on at like the same time. And then on Sunday, they had Duke and Clemson on at the same time. It's like, why did you do that? If you're an ACC fan, and it's another middle finger by CBS to the ACC, like, hey, screw you guys. We don't care about your fans, right? We're going to put Purdue on at 3 p.m. or whatever they played by themselves, hoping that they get upset because they're known chokers, right? And then it's one of the most boring games I've ever seen.
The contrast from the ACC when it came time for who got the seeds for March Madness compared to when it was which teams were getting bowl bids during football season. Because it was like the ACC sat on their hands when Florida State got snubbed. But then during basketball season, it was like they were pounding the tables for Pitt to be in as well and trying to lobby for as many teams to get bids as possible from the conference. Like, where the hell were you when there was the real screw job happening?
Oh, that's why I was joking. They put the games on super late. Why? I have no idea. There were multiple games that went past midnight. East Coast, when they could easily have started all the games like a little bit earlier. But the one thing you talk about screw jobs, NC State's game times were 100% ridiculous. They played the late night game, 9:50. Then they played the winner that had played at 7 or whatever the night before. They played on Saturday at like 7 or whatever, like 5 in the afternoon, like earlier, so that the team that they're playing had way more time to rest. And their guys are up past midnight or whatever. It's like, what are you doing? Who's putting this together? And then I think they went to overtime. And they had already played 5 games in 5 days, which is only the second time that happened. And that was that UConn team that won the national championship in 2011, I think with Kemba. And UConn gets screwed too. And that's why I'm wondering, like, the ACC, if all these teams leave, are they going to bring UConn in? Because like they're clearly not caring about them right now. And if you're UConn, like, do you just not care about football? Like, I don't even know what their course is as a school, because if you're not going to get the invite to the Big Ten and the SEC, and maybe they can get in the Big 12. But at that point, does it really matter? The Big 12 looks like it could be a great basketball conference. But then, like, Baylor's losing to Clemson. And I know they won the national championship a couple years ago, but it's like, you really shouldn't be getting out coached by Clemson's guy that I feel like he's been there forever. At least I recognize that guy. Maybe it was a new hire or whatever. And the SEC is choking up a storm, too. So it was like almost, I don't even know, like, if you're a top seed, you can move on. And it comes down to, do you have a favorable matchup? And so we'll see, because I have a feeling it's going to be just like football, where you might have one odd duckling make it to the Final Four, like we've been seeing in the past, one or two at most, and then the rest are going to be like the top most talented teams that are winning it all. No difference. But yet they want to expand the basketball tournament, because they know that if they expand it, you have a better chance of seeing the big name programs break through. Because of talent and depth. That's it. Tom Izzo was talking about it. Oh, it would have been a crying shame if we didn't make it because we're a big brand. It's like, who cares about you, man? At least they won and then they got toasted by North Carolina. It's like, you win one game, buddy. March. That's why they call him Mr. March, because he's never playing in April, Matt. Oh, he's out of the tournament by then. Just like back at home. But that's my thing. I think the Sweet 16 and everything kind of proves that we're going to see the same thing in football. It's going to be mostly big-time programs that have the best recruiting and the best coaching year after year and NIL. Some schools might break through. others don't. The ACC, whatever they're trying to do to hold the conference together, isn't going to work if coaches and players see it. Because he turned down, if the rumors are to believe, he turned down more money to go to Louisville to come to Michigan. And then Indiana, too. He's an Indiana guy. Indiana, and this is my segue into the NFL. Indiana fans were going crazy because they didn't want him to end up in Michigan. I've never seen a ton of different fan bases come around a coaching hire. They weren't just like petty jealousy, like when Harbaugh came and like a bunch of Ohio State and Michigan fans were saying, oh, he's going to choke. And then he finally wins the national championship and they can't say anything. They're like, glad he's gone. He left you high and dry. Ha ha ha. But for the basketball one, it's like Indiana wanted him. Ohio State wanted him. Louisville wanted him. The number one coaching guy, because like I said, he had never had a losing record. He's coached in the Final Four. And he was a game-winning shot by San Diego State. It wasn't like he got to the Final Four and they got blown out like we've seen from other coaches in the past. Maybe it doesn't work out. But if you're hiring, that's the best coach that's available. Did you make a Final Four? Check. Did you perform in that game? Yeah, that guy hit a game. We had a one-point lead, and the guy hit a game winner from the elbow as time expired. Okay. And you had pretty good defense on him. He did a step back. So it wasn't like they were out of position or anything. Never had a losing record. Insanity. Louisville fans, like, they have to be wondering. And I've seen them complaining about their conference and their team now. Because were they even one of the ones that were mentioned? I don't think they were. As part of the Magnificent Seven, right? They're just happy to be in the ACC. I bet they're not happy anymore. And maybe their next coach will be better than what Michigan ends up with. But at this point in time, you got to be upset with that move. We'll see what happens. Hopefully it's not a Rich Rod. Remember, Rich Rod was going to go to Bama, and then he went to Michigan instead. And Bama got Nick Saban. Sad times. This could be the same scenario. What if Louisville hires one of the other coaches, and then they win like 10 national championships? And Michigan stuck with another Rich Rod. I don't know how many alums we have that could come back and coach, though.
Well, by then, Harbaugh maybe flames out and he comes back.
He comes back, coaches basketball. He'd just be around the program. Well, they had talked about maybe bringing Beilein back. He had floated his name as being available. And I'm like, he's super old. But that would be funny if he came back and like the next year Michigan's like went to the Final Four after winning 8 games. People would be like, what the hell? Because with NIL, you could turn your team around in a hurry, right? Two of the guys that almost came to Michigan are both in the Sweet 16. One went to Illinois, and the other one went to Arizona, I think. And they are both the leading scorers or one of the top players for both of those teams, Shannon and Love from Arizona. So those are like the top two guys on the team. Michigan could have had both of them, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And so it could be just a matter of time where it's like NIL and the right coach could get those guys in, and then who knows what's going to happen. Right, just a little bit of coaching in basketball goes a long way. But anything else you want to talk about, like the conference stuff? I haven't heard much from like Clemson or Florida State. I did take a gander at some of the Clemson proceedings. They think they have a good chance of getting out. They just don't know if they have a landing spot. But a lot of people did bring back that original rumor that I had forgotten about, where the original rumor is that Fox was willing to pay less for Oregon, Washington, Clemson, and Florida State to all join the Big Ten. Two of those took the deal. Washington and Oregon are already in the Big Ten. So, and we don't know what taking less means, right? Because was it Maryland took less? But they did that because the Big Ten then paid their buyout to the ACC. So there's a history of them doing that to help a team out, get out of the conference. So don't be surprised if you see something like that happen, because I've been saying all along, I'm going to be shocked if either of them get an invite from the SEC, because their only TV partner right now is ESPN. and they're basically biting the hand that feeds them. No athletic achievements, national championships, basketball runs, Final Fours, none of that can overcome. Then no matter what happens with those two schools, ESPN's gonna lose money in the deal. They're either gonna have to pay them more to join the SEC, or they're losing that other revenue from the ACC, and they're losing like what, 16 teams are left. They'd all take a lower cut, and potentially they could lose Notre Dame, which is the Golden Goose. And right now ESPN has them at least a little bit by proxy. If the ACC implodes, I'd say there's like a 5% chance Notre Dame joins the SEC, right? It's not good. So all they have to do is go and like become an affiliate member at like the Big 12, which is owned by Fox right now, and ESPN loses that chunk. They don't even have to go to the Big 10, because I don't think the Big 10 would take them as like a partial member. Maybe they would at this point. But either way, ESPN loses a big chunk of their other sports, because Notre Dame brings casual people watching all kind of weird stuff, right? That's my last tidbit. Anything else you have on it?
Well, one of the things that I saw, and I don't even know how much bearing this would have on it, but within the state law of Florida State and Florida having to play each other, they said there were people making comments about, well, if Florida State jumps to the Big Ten, then that may mean that the rivalry game with Miami may have to end. And it's like, at this point, if that's what has to be sacrificed, then so be it. Like, they showed this past season, and they can spin it any way they want to, but they basically showed staying in the conference is not going to help their cause for anything. And if for anything else, it almost makes it more challenging, because you know with the Power 2 that they're going to lock up multiple spots. And so you really only have one legitimate shot of running the table. And if you don't, then you don't stand a chance of getting your foot in the door for the playoffs, because you know there's only one spot available.
And see, I'll say, I don't think the Miami one would end. I'd be more worried about the Florida one. Because I think you enter a scenario where, like, Penn State has it with Pitt and now West Virginia, where they know how important those regional rivalries are, and they know they can most likely win every year because of the talent discrepancy. You don't want to be losing half your games against Florida that is going to have the same financial capabilities as what you have in the Big Ten, where you can go to play Miami that, yeah, they're throwing a lot of NIL around, but as we've seen from bigger NIL funds like Texas A&M, they haven't been able to put it together. So that would be the one that I think that they could keep around, because like Michigan was ready to keep Notre Dame around. Notre Dame canceled that contract. Harbaugh was instrumental in getting Notre Dame to come back for at least a home and home. And it's partially because of the imploding Pac-12, where Notre Dame's like, yeah, our schedule's going to pretty much suck. Like, Michigan, you guys want to come back for like a longer term deal? And it like hasn't been worked out yet, because it's like, well, we don't know how the Big Ten's going to be now. We got a lot of your buddies coming in. Like, well, what do we need you guys for? And that's where, like, I think Florida coming in, it wouldn't be a long shot if Miami ended up just joining the Big Ten. And that's why I would say I'd be more hesitant, because like the SEC has been kind of pushing where they pretend they want to do a heavy non-conference, but they really don't. And they really don't want, because right now, in the eyes of Florida, them playing Florida State, they should have the advantage over them. I mean, they haven't recently, and maybe even historically, I don't know. But that's the one where they think like, oh, we should easily own Florida State because of our financial advantages and recruiting in the SEC compared to whatever they're in. I think if Florida State joins the Big Ten and that money shifts to where Florida State's in power, don't be surprised if Florida's like, yeah, sorry guys, we can't work this out anymore. We got a powerful game against UCF. We got to play our other buddies, USF.
But I think they have it written into the state legislature that Florida State and Florida got to play every year.
Oh, that's in there now. But don't worry, I've seen a lot of rivalries go the wayside with this regional stuff. I'm telling you, once a lot of those Florida guys see that Florida State's making a ton more money, and they see a bunch of L's coming their way, they'll be like, "Eh, we can shift this a little bit. That's a little hard for us to play every year. Sorry, fellas." We'll meet up with you in like 10 years. Because that's where I'm like, when I see other states kind of fall apart like that with all the shifting, I think that's where it's kind of going. You have one side that thought they had an advantage, lose that advantage. And so they just kind of shift the narrative to whatever they need. But it'll be interesting to see. I did bring up the Indiana thing. I forgot it. My segue to the NFL is a lot of people, surprisingly, they were talking about their team in basketball being similar to the Steelers, where is it okay that we're just like coasting along with winning records in the Big Ten and we're not winning anything at all? Like, just to be saying like, yep, we have a winning record, just like Mike Tomlin in the NFL. And they're like, we should have just fired our coach. As soon as they saw that May was available, they're like, we should have just fired him. Took the chance on May, an Indiana guy, and an alum. He could have came home. He's fired up. He's supposed to be like one of the guys that's like purely analytical, studying like even European basketball to get an edge. And they're like, we didn't pull the trigger. Now what do? They're stuck. And that's kind of like, as I was reading it, I'm like, that is a pretty good comparison. The Steelers with Tomlin's like, what are they doing? They're going to kind of bring in some new guys, Russell Wilson. Then they're saying that he might even get cut. Did we talk about that last week? Because they're like, oh, we realized that might be a bad move having Russell Wilson and Fields in. If Fields outplays him, we can just cut Wilson. And then that made me think, are they going to draft another quarterback then?
I think they will.
Yeah, but you don't have to. If you're absolutely set this year thinking that you're going to have a Wilson and Fields battle, I think you wait and see what happens. Maybe you bring in like another like vet that's kind of just floating around that's worth basically nothing, like Zach Wilson. That I saw the Jets owners like, he's not that bad. Come on, we'll trade him. If no one wants to trade him, we're not cutting him. Come on, guys, please. Please, come talk to us. And it's like, Steelers could probably be like, hey, we'll give you a 2038 seventh rounder. And they'll be like, we'll take it. And like, deal. I don't know if you can trade that far in advance, but that's basically what the Jets are down to at this point. Anything. Like, wasn't it Bull Durham? They traded that guy for like a bunch of bats. Like, yeah, we got 10 bats coming in for you. He's like, that's what I was worth. They're like, yeah, but these are great bats, man. Quality, they're primo. I don't know if that was Bull Durham or if that was maybe my Major League or one of those movies, but yeah, they trade a guy for bats. That's kind of what I feel like Zach Wilson will be going. It's like, hey, we got a bunch of new helmets coming in. They prevent concussion, Zach. You can't be too safe. Thanks for your time with the team. And then he just there. Because I think that's what the Steelers could do. I mean, they paid basically nothing, right? For those two quarterbacks. So maybe they make a first round move and kind of shock everybody. But I really don't see them getting a first round guy high. And then just like, oh, you're going to come in as like the third stringer. It's just like, it almost feels like they're making moves just to make them at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like, we did them. I think I made that point last week or whatever when I compared them to, like, the Pirates bringing back McCutcheon. Like, see? We're trying. We're trying, guys. Russell Wilson, he'll sell a few jerseys. People were like, he was at the game. He was at the NC State game because he was an NC State guy. Did you see him at the Sweet 16 game or whatever? He's already in Pittsburgh, man.
That's right.
He's there. He's ready to go. Watching his boys advance.
Well, they said he sold his house in Denver. How pissed do you think he's going to be if he signs the contract in Pittsburgh, sells his house, moves to Pittsburgh, and they're like, nah, dog, you're done.
Well, if you're him, do you buy a house in Pittsburgh? You just rent a condo? Like, didn't Ben Roethlisberger have, like, a condo or something they talked about for years? He's, like, lived, like, in apartments or something, like, luxury apartments. Like, just do that. Because no one wants to actually live in Pittsburgh. Right? I know it sounds negative, but there was a story where it was, like, didn't a lot of players just have... They all lived in the apartments together during the season, but they all had homes elsewhere, like in Seven Springs or somewhere else, right? They're like, we don't actually want to live in Pittsburgh. So we all just kind of live together. And I swear to God, that was a story back when they won the Super Bowl and like the Packers won maybe, right? Then they beat the Packers or did they lose to the Packers?
Yeah, they lost Aaron Rodgers.
They beat the Cardinals. It might've been the Cardinals Super Bowl, or maybe it was the one they lost. Maybe that was the reason. Too many guys hanging out at the apartments playing Madden too late. Lost track of time. They're like, damn, we have a game. Let's go. So, I don't know. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe Russell Wilson already got the tidbits where it's like, yo, bro, we don't want to live there. You try to get through that traffic? That tunnel, man. You'd be stuck there forever. But, I don't know. I don't feel like... I feel like others seeing the Tomlin issue... makes me laugh because it's at the point where do you make a move just to make one to get fresh blood in there? But it could be a wrong move because, like, even one of the best, I think it might have been brought up with May. I think he brought up two basketball coaches that had moved on. One guy from Gonzaga, I think he said Gonzaga, took a bigger job, flamed out. And now he's coaching somewhere other, like lower school now, and his program's still chugging along, right? Gonzaga's still awesome in basketball, so he was nothing to them. And then he gave another coach that was like, when he took a bigger job, the success went with him, and the program kind of fell apart. So it's like, I'm hoping I'm the other one where the success comes with me to Michigan, and not the one where it's like, my program keeps living and I flame out. Which makes sense, because the Steelers could do the same thing. Like, you... get rid of Tomlin, it could take you to the next level. Could also just flame out, and then you become the Browns. Or whatever, like, right? But the crazy thing is, the Browns have made the AFC Championship game more recent than what the Steelers have. That's what people need to start hounding the Steelers social media accounts with. Right? Because there is a time lapse there of, like, postseason success. And when your other rivals have had more success than you recently, the Bengals making the Super Bowl, Browns getting to the AFC Championship game, you need that extra pressure, right? I feel like the fans need to start having that happen. But sometimes it's too much. Like, I see that with Ohio State. Because Ryan Day's still bringing up sign stealing and like other things. You can tell about talking about him being tough again. Like, that's 100% eating at him. 100% Harbaugh's in his head. There's no other way explanation for it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he came out and he was like, his beard was completely gray and he's just like losing it this year with all the pressure on him. But I feel like the fans have to let the franchise know that, hey, we need to see some signs of improvement. Signing other vets for cheap isn't going to make us feel better if they win 9 games again or whatever they had last year. So that's where I'm at. Watching that, seeing a lot of basketball parallels to the Steelers kind of hit home. And it's like, that is a good point. I should bring that up on the show. Because the other NFL news is the kickoff, right? They steal the kickoff idea from the XFL. And did you see the data on this? Because I don't even know. I didn't send it to you. So kickoffs went from whatever, 70% return rate to 27%, I think was the number. I didn't write it down. Concussion percentage on kickoff returns, the rate stayed the same. So the overall number fell down, But people were still having concussions on their kickoffs, even though they were returned less. Because when they did happen, there's a chance, a good chance of someone getting a concussion. Because they're running full speed and hitting each other. Right? It's like putting a helmet on and running into a tree. Because like basically that's what kind of what it is, right? Or someone on a bike. And then they were like, the XFL one actually reduced concussions because they moved everyone downfield. So you were more kind of just like shuffling, setting up your blocks. And then, I mean, the guy was trying to read and get past. So it was more of kind of like a cornerback wide receiver blocking type thing, where sometimes he's back off, wide receiver has to get up to him and block him. And you never really see anyone in that position get concussed, right? I never seen a receiver give a D back a concussion run blocking. Have you?
Maybe Greg Jones did North Carolina's defensive backs when he stiff armed him.
I was gonna say maybe David Boston when he was all roided up. Took someone down. But that's the first smart move I've seen the NFL kind of do. Where now I want to see kickoffs. Because the XFL had 90% return rate, right? Because in their mind, hey, all our guy has to do, we don't have to worry about like people weaving and like all kind of other collisions, like messing up our thing. Now everyone's kind of lined up. They can't move until the returner catches the ball. It kind of gives him an idea of like them setting up blocks and trying to actually return the ball. So I'm excited for it, because that's the one thing that I've been missing is like, give me some special teams play that can make a difference. There were so many touchbacks, even in college. I hope the college goes the same model too, because in college, it's like, that was one of the most exciting plays. Where wasn't it like Hester at Miami and then like for the Bears, like making big time returns and stuff all the time? When's the last time we had a guy? Was it him? That was how many years ago? Like, has there been a big time returner? I know you don't like me bringing up my boy Jabril. He had a bunch of punt returns. I don't think he ever returned a kickoff for a touchdown. There might have been some other ones that were like
the newest Steeler was Patterson.
Where'd he play?
He's the hybrid running back, wide receiver for the Falcons that Pittsburgh just signed.
Yeah, where did he play college, though? Was he the returner there?
I want to say yes. Was he Tennessee?
I don't know. I can't remember now. I thought it was in the SEC. I'm probably wrong. Now we'll sound like idiots. I don't know, because I'm trying to think of like who's the next, because like before a guy, a receiver or whatever getting those returns would be like the electric that could put him in the Heisman, like going back to like Desmond Howard or even like Charles Woodson, like the defensive guy can win it if they're scoring touchdowns and returning punts or kicks, right? Where it seems like Devonta Smith didn't do it. He wasn't returning stuff. You have to have it. Because Peppers was close. He was in the Heisman finalists list. And he had a couple touchdowns. And he had that big one against Penn State that got tripped up at like the 5. I always wondered if he would have scored there, would that extra touchdown have been enough to kind of give him the Heisman? Because like, you have to have a Heisman moment, I feel like. Because even Sue almost had the Heisman moment in the Big 12 championship game, where didn't Texas come back and kick that field goal? If he would have had a big time sack in that final drive, or like a big pass knockdown or something that would have won them the Big 12 championship, I think 100% Sue would have won the Heisman. But nowadays it's like, they don't even need a Heisman moment. They're like, you're a good quarterback. Okay.
You're an okay quarterback.
Yeah. You're okay. You're putting up a lot of stats up there. You're not really winning any games. Like, they don't even care about winning anymore. So it's not even that, you don't even have to be on a winning team. But that's the one thing I used to like about the Heisman. Because like, if you go back through, and I feel like the commercials too, they're all from the past. Like a lot of the Heisman moments are from past games. Like the Michigan punt returns. What was it? Like Vince Young had a couple, didn't he win the Heisman? Tim Tebow, of course, he had that crying speech. And then he had the jump pass. Cam Newton. Like, I feel like that was it. Like, he might have been the last one. Now the Heisman moments are kind of just like, eh, you might have one. You're catching like a 5-yard swing pass for like the thousandth time. You're like, yeah, great job, buddy. Or the guy just running, like throwing a deep ball up in the triple coverage, and his guy's just so much bigger, like USC. It's like, hey, all of our receivers are 5 stars. Or like Ohio State's guy. It's like, oh, yeah, of course they're going to catch the ball. We're playing Rutgers today. Nothing against them, but they're not going to stop a bunch of 5-star receivers. Like, are you serious? Might as well play zone, try to force them to run the clock out. But that's what I want to see from the NFL is more actual game action. Because they give us the commercial, kickoff commercial, at least in college, and some of the NFL games, they start to do that. That drives me nuts, right? Where you get the kickoff, or you get the commercial after the touchdown, they kick the ball off, it's a touchback, and then another commercial. You see no action. What's the point of that? Give me a kickoff return any day. At least I could see another touchdown. Or like close. I've seen guys that actually like come close to doing something. But I want to see some big time returns. So I like the change. What about you?
Yeah. I can roll with it.
You prefer touchbacks?
I mean, I feel like that's essentially where what they've gotten to. I mean, even with the rule changes that they put in last year, it was just like, just drill it through the back of the end zone.
Yeah, but see, the XFL one had 90-something percent return rate. The NFL, they changed theirs not as drastic. I think they changed the yardage around, and they're hoping for like 80%. I was thinking, like, just go to the XFL and have 90%, buddy. I don't even want to see 5% touchbacks. Right, if your kicker's that good, then maybe. But at least give it another play. And it's way better than the alternative where people were saying, oh, you should just do a 4th and 30 and let them punt it. And then they can do a fake punt. It's like, no one's going to do a fake punt on the first play of the game. If it's 4th and 30. Or what did they say, 4th and 10 from the 30 or something like that? Where it's like, what'd be the difference? What if they started doing that and teams just figured, oh, what the hell? Just run the offense out there. Like all week, you just practice like the first scripted play. You know how those usually kind of work? Because you're working on them all week. And you just have an 11-yard scripted play every week. You're just trying it out to get that first down. You never have to kick off ever again. At least now it's more traditional, right? So if you get like dementia in your older years, you're watching like newer game highlights, you're not going to be like, what the hell happened to the kickoff?
But you know, I don't think the kickoff is as much of an issue for me as the hip drop tackles now.
Oh, they banned that, didn't they?
They banned them because it's what got Jordan Travis hurt. So they finally did the right thing.
But I don't know how they're going to police it. They're going to police it like head to head, aren't they?
Well, and that's the point that I was getting at, is I feel like playing defense is so hard to begin with. And then when you have these size mismatches like a Gronk or Andrews from Baltimore or Derrick Henry, like, it's hard to match up 135, 145-pound defensive back with these 250, 260-pound wrecking balls. And the only way that they're going to physically be able to bring them down is to hip drop.
Well, the big guys anyway, you're slower. So it's not really a hip drop. You're just not able to match the speed if a guy is running away from you. You can't horse collar. You can't just like fall like a hip drop or whatever they're calling it. What the hell are you going to do? Like, what is the other option? Like, what are they going to do? Grab him by the arm and twist him around? Seriously. Look at the play where Michigan had it last year, where like the Kenneth Grant, the defensive lineman, ran down Penn State's running back. I mean, that's basically like a hip drop, but it's because he weighs 300 pounds and he just ran down their running back. What do you want him to do? He's not going to be able to match the speed. He's either going to dive and grab a leg. And do you want a 300-pound guy grabbing someone's ankle? Like, there's no other option. Like, can't grab him up high. That's a penalty. Can't just try to grab him around the waist. That's a penalty. You're just going to be grabbing his leg and twisting it.
I mean, I think you try to... You try to teach the, like, the hawk tackling style, but I feel like you almost just have to say in certain situations, if you do it, we're going to eat the penalty, and it is what it is.
Oh, 100%, because, like, if he doesn't make that tackle, that's a touchdown, and Penn State might win the game. Like, yeah, you're going to take the penalty. It's kind of like a pass interference. You're beat. You tackle them. They throw the penalty or they don't. They say you get tripped up. Like, what's the difference?
Well, when I saw, like, that, It's gonna be controversial because it's going to change the outcome of a game, and one of the biggest surprise endings was that Greatest Show on Turf game with Tennessee. Tennessee had that pass complete and got tackled a yard shy of the end zone. Following the new rule, that's a hip drop, first and goal for Tennessee.
With no time left.
They get an untimed down.
I know, that's what I was thinking, like, because that's the same scenario I just laid out. He's ahead of him. He can't grab him and pull him down from the top. He has, like, no other option, right, other than not tackling him. So what are you supposed to do? And in that scenario, are they even going to throw the flag? Because you know what will happen. The coach will challenge it if he has a challenge. And at the end of the Super Bowl, we're waiting 3 minutes through commercials as a guy's talking about it in the booth as to whether to throw the flag on the biggest stage. And it's going to, cause it's not just going to be like, oh, that's the rule. We're going to call it. That's 100% going to be challenged and replayed. And then you're just adding time to the game for no reason. The same thing, going back to the tournament, the same thing happened at the end of the Kansas game. Samford got ripped off because the guy came down, made a clean block. The refs weren't, and someone said, "Oh, they did a lot of running. It was tough on them. They're out of shape by that point. They're tired at that point in the game." I'm like, it's their job. Then don't make the call. If you don't see it, then don't blow the whistle, buddy. Just pretending that it's a foul. Because there was another one where. I think it was the NC State one. The same thing happened. Penalty. They tried to show the replay. And they're like, you didn't even touch the guy. How'd they call a foul on that? And it's like, they just wanted to. They're like willing it. They're willing Oakland to get the win with these bad calls. Where on the other hand, it's like, it's Kansas. Benefit of the doubt. They can't give Samford a chance to win. Because they might not have won. I think they would have been down one at that point, and they would have had the ball with like a couple seconds left. That's a magic March moment right there. A game-winning shot to beat Kansas. And instead, we watch a guy make free throws and salt the game away or whatever. Dumb. And why replay that? It's the same thing, too. The thing that drives me nuts, because I think this was going to happen with the NFL when we get to these tackles. The NCAA, the rule is last touch. Right? So if you smack a guy's hand... And I think this is the same in the NBA. I've seen a couple replays where it just doesn't make sense. If you're the defender, you smack the guy's arm, right? They don't call a foul on you, but the ball goes out of bounds. You never touch the ball. So it's not out of bounds on you. They didn't call a foul on the floor, but you get the ball back because it's out of bounds on the other guy. I've seen it happen multiple times because they can't call a penalty on replay, right? That's the rule. So in the NFL, same thing. Is it going to clean up the tackles? No, I think it goes back to your point where it's like you just take the risk. Same with basketball. If you have a risk of slapping the guy's hand and getting the ball back late in the game when you're down, you're going to foul anyway, right? Why not try to smack the ball out of his hand and then let the replay do its job? Because one of the games, I saw that happen. They gave the ball back to their team, and then they had to foul him again. It took like 5 extra seconds off the clock. I forget what game that was. And I thought, what a ripoff. That guy had... They should never have gave that team the ball back. It should have been the other guys, but the defender made the play. And when they do the replay, of course, they're like, look, it's touching his finger right there. It's like, of course it is. He's holding it. Right? Unless I'm the only one that's crazy by that rule. But if you're the guy holding the ball and a guy smacks your hand and you're still holding the ball, it's going to be out of bounds on you every single time. Unless the guy physically actually hits the ball and then carries through. That's why that replay makes no sense. I think the hip tackle thing is going to be even worse than the helmet. Because at least helmet, you can say his head was down. Was he? Could you see his eyes? No. Now we're going to be saying, well, you see his hips move a little bit there? Like the telestrator is going to show his hip swiggle, Matt. And I'm gonna look up to the sky and say, why the hell am I watching this on TV? That's my last NFL thing. You have anything else for the NFL?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Now, I had one more thing. I was going to put this in the middle of the show. I know we're at close to time. The Otani scandal, right? I think that's how you say his name. I'm not 100% sure. The big-time two-way international player from, what, Korea, South Korea, I think, or Japan or whatever, comes in. He's making, what, $4 million gambling bets from his account. This is confirmed, right? It's in his name, coming from his account, gambling bets. He's paying a bookie. So no news. They change the story and say that, his translator did it. Because, Matt, it makes so much sense for everyone to just let their translator take care of their millions of dollars, right? Because not only is he the translator, he's also the accountant.
Well, he's also going to know. He'll know which games to fix, so.
Yeah, he's a man of many hats. Right? Best buds. He's like, oh, we're best buds. Oh, wait, never mind. Strike that from the record. Purely professional relationship. We're not best buds at all. We never hang out or, you know, bet games together. And to me, I'm like, why is Major League Baseball brushing this under the rug? Is it because he's an international player and they don't want, like, an international incident? It's clear that no matter what happens from his account, he should be banned at least a season. If they're not letting my man Pete Rose in, this guy confirmed millions of dollar bets from his account. That translator story that changed makes no sense. He signed the documents. He knew where the money was going. The guy is speaking a different language. He's not an idiot. They're making it sound like he doesn't understand and like he has a caretaker. That's like, oh, buddy, just you have dementia. I'm just going to just sign your house over to me. No big deal. He's like, wait, he can't check his own account and say like, yo, I had $4 million in here yesterday. What the hell happened? Oh, yeah. Remember you told me to transfer that money to my bookie? Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. He's like, oh, bet US. I don't even know where the hell he bets through. It's like, oh, yeah, that's where it went. Ah, oh, got it. So 100%, at least by association, guilty. Just because they changed the story, guilty. You can't lie and make something else up. And then he gives a no press, filmed, just recorded statement that the Dodgers or whoever he plays for now, Angels, I don't even know. Whoever they helped him put that together. Because they don't want the scandal. And I hope it doesn't get forgotten because Pete Rose came out and said the same thing. Like, I wish I had someone else to blame. It reminds me of Chris Carter, right? He came out and his like advice to new football players was always have a fall guy. Can you imagine? Like my what if they get, you're like, hey, can you give the graduation speech this year? You're like, yeah. And your speech is, hey, you should always have a fall guy. Like go forward, make sure you're never guilty. You need a guy to take the fall for you. And all the kids at school, high school would be like, oh, yeah, great advice. Great advice, Matt. That's like the old Chris Carter. So, Otani has his fall guy, his interpreter. And now, people around Major League Baseball, casual fans, hardcore fans, I don't know how you can be in denial over this. Worse than the steroids era. 100% worse. And I've been saying it. I hate the gambling stuff. I talked about, I think, gambling before the college football game, like it'd been nice to hedge my bets against Michigan, right? Like an emotional hedge. Bet on Bama before the game. And they were like, oh, sorry, you can't make any bets down here in North Carolina. We're trying to work on getting it in place before the NCAA tournament, because that's when the governor said we need to have the taxes figured out by. And it's like, you could have had it 100% in place whenever the law passed. Instead, you guys are haggling on taxes, tax percentages or whatever. And of course, lo and behold, ready down here, right in time for the ACC basketball tournament, which you can't tell me. NC State wins? Could be rigged. How the hell do I know? How the hell do I know? Did you see that Missouri quarterback, I think? Or was it Vanderbilt? One of those quarterbacks said that the mob told him that they needed to fix a game against Alabama. And that Alabama, their football program is heavily involved with the mob. Did you see that story?
I don't think.
Oh, you should look this up, dude. So the quarterback, I forget who it was from one of those lower schools. Basically, his premise was that a guy came up to him, offered him like $200,000 to throw the game so that Bama would basically cover. Like, look, you're going to lose to Bama anyway. Why not get paid doing it? And then people were going back through after a story and like checking the lines, and like Bama wasn't beating the line every time. It was pretty much 50-50, right? Which is what the gambling Vegas tries to do. So they come out on top. You can't just have Bama cover every week. People would start to catch on. So his story kind of doesn't make sense, right? But it almost seems like one random guy pretended to be the mob. It was like, oh, I'll get the quarterback to throw two picks this week. I'll offer him $200,000. I'll bet $1 million myself, right? If he takes it. And if not, I attack that guy. And so it made me wonder, like, this guy's coming on a podcast talking about it. Did he go through with it? And you're just indicting yourself. Right? Now you're going to be investigated. Unless he said, like, no, I didn't do it. This is what the guy said. But he was like, oh, Bama's heavily involved. Like, we fix a lot of their games, is what the complainer made it seem like. In the SEC. And, I mean, honestly, like we've said before with reffing, Georgia fans, if they heard that story, they would think in the championship game last year, the reffing went in Bama's favor. Who knows? Maybe the mob was fixing games. Bama wins a couple games they're not supposed to, covers a couple games they're not supposed to. I mean, you'll have to. People think that, oh, they're fixing games. They're fixing every single game. No, that's not how it works. You fix one or two, you have to lose some of them. Otherwise, they're going to get suspicious, right? It's not like you're like, oh, we're only going to fix one game. It doesn't make any sense. So, like, of course, that's why the gambling stuff is always funny, because it's like people that I know are always talking about, like, how they're gambling. It's like, all right, are you winning? Sometimes, like, all right, I don't see you moving into, like, a big house or something, buddy. It's like Ohtani plays the game. He's $4-something million in the hole, right? You think a guy that would know the inside track, he'd be winning. If he was winning, this wouldn't even be a story, Matt. Am I right?
It might be a bigger story.
Well, how would they know? You just say, oh, that was endorsement money from my bookie. And that's legal, right? I think, or can athletes do ads for gambling?
I don't know.
I guess I would never pay attention. I try to block them out.
I'm sure they probably could.
Yeah, why not? Right? They were doing crypto ads. Then he did the crypto stuff too, which makes me think that he did the gambling. Right? He's like, I'm gambling on crypto, I'm gambling on games. Like, what's the difference? But that's my end to the show. Do your research into it. Don't let my opinion color anything. But it's just a little too suspicious when the story starts changing and someone's paying millions of dollars. Doesn't make any sense. Anything else you want to talk about today?
No, that's about it.
All right, let's go. ACC, best basketball conference, Matt. Got to keep that together. Maybe Florida State will be locked in there until 2036, my man. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.